From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, millions of Americans live with limited or no access to local news. The erosion of newspapers, also the end of federal funding for public broadcasting, threaten the public's ability to stay informed. The Local News Initiative, based at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern, has been tracking the state of local news for a couple of decades. We'll discuss the latest report. We'll also look at some potential solutions. That's all ahead on a special episode of State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, Tim Franklin. He's the founding director of the Medill Local News Initiative at Northwestern and a professor and chair in local news. Tim, it's good to have you back on the show with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sean. Good to be with you again.
So I guess I'll just start off with a basic question here. What is the state of local news as we wrap up the year 2025?
Well, Sean, just to step back for a second, you know, we are living through a historic transformation in all media and in local news, especially in terms of how people are consuming news these days, in terms of how it's produced, in terms of how it's distributed out to people, and in how it's paid for. And so we are still in the adolescent years, as I've heard it said, of this historic transformation in local news. And whenever there is this kind of a generational change, there's both opportunity and there's destruction. And right now, destruction is winning out, unfortunately, when it comes to local news. So in our most recent report, which was just published a few weeks ago, it includes every local news outlet in the U.S., newspaper, digital, print, and public broadcasting. It showed that, unfortunately, we're continuing to lose newspapers at an alarming rate. We're losing more than two per week. There were about 150 closures just in the past year. And we now have an increase in the number of news desert counties across the United States. There are 212 entire counties with no source of local news. There are another 1,525 counties that are down to only one remaining news source. So you total all that up, Sean, and you know we have 50 million Americans with limited to no access to local news. And so this is creating, I think a lot of problems and challenges. We can get into that. And then the other thing that we looked at, especially this year, which would be relevant to your audience especially, we looked at the impact of the defunding of public broadcasting, $1.1 billion that was cut back in the fall, and the impact that that's going to have on communities, especially medium and small size communities across the country. And I think over the next couple of years, unfortunately, we're going to see potentially the loss of dozens of public broadcasting stations across the country.
Yeah, and I will say from a public broadcasting perspective, a lot of the stations I've talked to, including the one I work for, we have seen people step up. People have given more money who have
yes.
maybe either supported it in the past or people that have never supported it suddenly saying, hey, it's time to do it. Now, the problem with that, though, and Tim, you can, you know, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but from a financial standpoint, is this money maybe was a goal that you could attain for fundraising that could help you expand in previous years, now is going just to fill this hole and keep the basics going. So again, it's a challenge either way you look at it. But let me ask you about Illinois in particular. I think last time when we spoke about this, you said Illinois was hit harder maybe than most states. Is that still the case?
It is, Sean, unfortunately. And so according to our new report, there are now nine counties in Illinois that are news deserts. That's up from five last year. That includes Scott, Green, Calhoun, Clark, Jasper, Clay, Edwards, White, and Alexander counties. And then there are another 39 counties that are down to only one local news source. So when you put those two numbers together, that's almost half of all of Illinois counties that are either news deserts or low information counties. And then when you look at total number of newspapers lost, Illinois ranks in the top 10 in the nation. 46% of the state's newspapers have been lost. By comparison, nationally, we've lost a little under 40% of newspapers. So Illinois is ahead of the nation. Not a statistic you want to be ahead of the nation, but is ahead of the nation in that category. And then sadly, Illinois has also lost 54% of its newspaper jobs in the decade ending in 2024, over half of the newspaper jobs. So, we're losing both news outlets and journalists in the state of Illinois at an alarming rate.
And Charlie, somebody who's been in journalism his whole life and has worked and followed this industry for so long, really, terms like news desert, I didn't even know what that was till about maybe 15, 20 years ago, we started to hear that a little bit more.
Yeah, Tim was mentioning the news deserts. One of the things that struck me was how many of them are in southern Illinois. And in the Chicago region, we're pretty robust in terms of the news outlets, not just the major metropolitan newspapers, the suburban newspapers, and also the video and audio, the public radio. There's really in public TV, there's really a good representation there. But as you get further downstate, it's a real problem. And if you look at the nine counties that don't have a news source, six of them are south and east of Sangamon County. And of the 39 that have only one news source, 26 of them are south of Sangamon. So if you were to take the state of Illinois and on a map and split it right down the middle and then divide it to thirds, the bottom third, there's really only a handful of counties that have more than one news source. And in many instances, the news source may be only one digital outlet, or it may be only a weekly newspaper. And one of the things I noticed, even with the dailies, and I don't know, Tim, if you guys kept track of this, how many daily newspapers are now not really daily in the sense that they do not print a copy 7 days a week? Like our local newspaper, the State Journal Register, doesn't have a Saturday print edition. They have an online edition that you can go to, but they don't do it on Saturday. And I'm pretty sure a number of other Illinois newspapers are only 6 days a week or 5 days a week. And I guess maybe that's where we're headed.
Yeah, Charlie, those are great points. In terms of print frequency, we count a newspaper as being daily if it prints 4 days a week or more. So we're not even looking at 7 days a week. But a very large chunk of the remaining print papers print less than 7 days a week. And many of the large chains have already scaled back to 6 days or 5 days a week. And that is a trend that we're seeing. And the Tampa Bay Times, one of the best regional papers in the country, went from 7 days to 2 days back during the pandemic. And then they're pushing their e-replica edition. The large state paper in New Jersey also is eliminating print. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution announced that it's going digital only starting in January. So we're beginning to see even these larger state regional newspapers scale back their print distribution. And in terms of where the news deserts are, Charlie, you made a great point. Southeastern Illinois and Southern Illinois have definitely been the hardest hit areas of the state. There are a couple of counties in far northern, the northwestern part of the state, that are also suffering from a lack of local news. Even this data, I think, underestimates the problem of the local news crisis, because many of the newspapers that are still printing or that are still publishing online have had their staffs hollowed out
Yeah, and
from
that's a good point, and I think it's reflected thinking about it. And you recall, Tim, when you were at the Trib, how many pages was the daily edition?
Oh gosh, yeah. On Sunday, you could get a hernia picking the thing up out of the
Yeah,
driveway.
and now it's scaled back, and it's maybe half as thick as it used to be. The Sun-Times is maybe a quarter as thick as it used to be when I was working there. And I think that's a reflection of the declining staff, and it's also a reflection of the production costs, as I think newspapers are moving away from printing 7 days a week because it saves money if you just put it online.
Now, newspapers, Tim, have not really found a way, or really most media outlets found a way to make money while being on the internet. It's almost like you either have to give the product away or put up a paywall, which almost angers people more than if you'd had another way to charge them. I will say I've seen some local people who put together a website, especially things for crime news, and I think they serve a purpose. I think they're helpful because maybe the newspaper's not going to be able to get this information out as fast. Other media outlets are not going to be able to do it. But what are some of the downsides of getting your news only through, say, a Facebook group?
Well, that's a great question. And we're actually doing a research project now on where people who live in news deserts are turning to get local news and information since there is no news source in those areas. And anecdotally, what I can tell you from our research so far is that people are turning to Facebook groups. They're turning to social media. And I think it's great that people are becoming civically engaged and going into Facebook groups to try to find out what's happening in their communities. But the problem with that is in many cases, I think they're becoming cesspools of misinformation and disinformation because there's no journalist in that Facebook group that is doing what journalists do, fact-checking, interviewing sources, pulling documents, and really providing kind of a fact-based perspective of what's happening in those Facebook groups. Now, I will say, I know we're going to talk about innovations later, but the Daily Herald up here in the Northwest or in the northern suburbs of Chicago has been putting reporters into Facebook groups to get story ideas and also to provide perspective and context onto what those discussions are in the Facebook groups. So, but one of the big problems is just this misinformation, disinformation crisis. And then the other thing that we also see is that people, when they don't have local news, they turn especially to national cable news sources. And what that does is it puts people in their own partisan filter bubbles or cocoons, if you will. Those who are listening, say, to Fox on the right, or I guess it's MS Now on the left. And so they're getting their news filtered through, what is a fairly partisan perspective. And then that increases polarization in the U.S. So, the implications from this loss of local news, I think, is really severe. And I hope that we can find a way to address it.
Yeah, Charlie, that's got to be since you started, and you started in the 1960s as a full-time reporter. It's got to be one of the biggest changes because I think there was a time when this was looked at as a profession, being a reporter, that was noble. You were telling what was going on, you were informing the public. A lot of people don't view the profession that way today.
I think it's fair to say that being a reporter, being a journalist, does not carry with it the same level of prestige that it would have been back in the day. And I think part of it is that there's is built up such a level of distrust in the media, and a lot of it fomented by President Trump and his group, that people will doubt what they read. They'll see something in the Trib or the Sun Times, and they'll say, "Oh, well, that's all biased." Or there'll be instances where the media in the Chicago, ABC TV in Chicago does a good job of this, where they'll call out where somebody is telling a lie, and the response will be, "Oh, that's fake news. You can't believe them." And so I think that kind of detracts from it. I recall the reaction after the Watergate scandal, when suddenly being a reporter was really a prestigious occupation, and a lot of people wanted to get into doing that because they had the ability, as a reporter, you can let people know where things are falling down. You can tell them about the corruption that maybe is being hidden. And in my mind, that's one of the problems when you don't have a local news source and people go to Fox or they go to MS Now. They don't find out what's happening in their local school board or what's happening at the county board, the kind of decisions that are made that would affect them in their daily lives a lot more significantly than what something is happening out in Washington, D.C. And there's no one there to record this, no one there to inform them, well, here's what's happening at this, at the local level. Here's what's really going to affect you. This may affect your property taxes, that sort of thing.
I think, as usual, Charlie's right. I would just add, we do a lot of research. We do polling of people's attitudes and behaviors toward news. And the one thing I would say is that there is a much, much greater trust of local news than there is of national news. I mean, there's a gulf of 30, 40 percentage points. And so that I think is somewhat encouraging that there is at least more trust of local news or organizations. And you know, look, these are journalists who live in the communities. You see them at the PTA meetings. You see them at the Little League Diamond. You see them at the Scouts meeting or the Rotary Club. But they're part of the community, and they're reporting on the nuts and bolts of what's happening, the local town council or the local zoning board or the local park district, the local schools, local high school sports. These don't have to be partisan, and in many cases aren't partisan entities. They're simply trying to tell the stories of what's happening in their communities. They're your neighbors. They're your people you see at the grocery store. They're not some distant, faraway, you know, ideologue.
Well, Tim, one of the things I hear from people a lot is they say, "Well, I wish we had more local news. I wish that the media outlets had more people could go out and do this stuff." I guess, is the issue really that people just don't want to pay for it? What is the reasoning of why, if the public wants something, usually somewhere along the line, business or someone will step in and provide that service? But what's the holdup here?
Well, that's a great question, Sean. And that's kind of the existential question of this whole local news crisis. So in the last 20 years, 80% of newspaper advertising revenue has vaporized. And it used to be that advertising revenue was the primary source of revenue for any local news organization. And in any industry, if you lost 80% of your income stream from your primary revenue source, you'd be having problems. And that's exactly what's happening here. We've seen the implosion of the business model of local news. And so what are news organizations doing now? As you referenced earlier, Sean, they're turning to reader revenue or digital subscriptions or memberships. For a century or more, advertising has basically subsidized the cost of news creation and news production and delivery to folks. And now folks are asking, news organizations are asking readers to chip in to help cover those costs, because journalism can be expensive and labor intensive. And so we've seen some success with that in Illinois and in other communities across the country. And so that can be encouraging at a number of places now. Reader revenue makes up more than half of the total revenue. We're also seeing some new revenue streams being created for local news with things like events or digital marketing operations that local news organizations are building. So that can be encouraging. The problem, one of the problems, is that there's also, I think, subscription fatigue. So we just did a poll of Chicago area news consumers a couple months ago, and only 15% of the households said that they were paying for local news in some form. So not a large percentage are paying. And then, you're also, folks are paying for Netflix or HBO Max or Hulu or Disney, or pick your streaming platform. And then to add a news subscription on top of that for a lot of folks is problematic. So I do think that we're seeing some more success with memberships and other revenue streams, but that is the problem, is building those revenue streams to pay for local news. We are seeing philanthropy step up in a big way. We can talk more about that. We're also seeing public policy play more of a role in helping to fund local news, especially in Illinois.
Yeah, there was some legislation passed, I believe, providing some tax incentives for hiring reporters. I don't know how that's going at this point. I haven't seen the latest numbers on that. But Tim, I guess we'll go to this idea of possible solutions. I mean, I have to say, from what I hear and what I see, I'm somewhat down on the industry right now and whether or not, you know, what's the future going to hold. But there are some positive signs out there, or maybe some changes. Your thoughts on that?
Sure. So, since I just mentioned public policy, I guess I'll go to that first. So last year, the General Assembly passed and the governor signed into law a package of bills to help assist the local news industry. There are a number of other states that have now done other public policy measures. In Illinois, it's a tax credit for hiring and retaining local journalists. And so actually we just filed a FOIA with the state to get the most recent data. We just got it back yesterday. And so there's been about $3.8 million that's been given in the form of credits to local news organizations for retaining journalists. That there's a $4 million pool available. There are still some applications pending. That has helped well more than 100 news outlets across the state in some form or another get some revenue to come in. There also was a $1 million pool that was set aside for hiring new journalists, and a little under 300,000 of that has been awarded to local news outlets. So there's still a fairly significant chunk of that money that's still available. These are incentives that have been put in place. There are incentives and tax credits for other industries in Illinois and in other states to try to help industries that are considered, you know, vital to communities and vital to the public interest. This is a 5-year package. It's a $25 million, $5 million a year over 5 years. And the hope is this would be a bridge to help local news organizations develop a business model for the future to sustain themselves going forward. So public policy is playing a significant role in a growing number of states. I think there's something like 20 some states now that have either passed or are considering some form of assistance for local news organizations. Illinois was the first state to start handing out tax incentives or tax credits to local news organizations. New York passed an even bigger bill, but theirs has not been implemented yet. So that's coming. There's also a big philanthropic campaign called Press Forward. This includes dozens of large and community foundations across the country that is going to dole out more than $500 million with a B over the next 5 years to try to help local news organizations. I know there's a chapter in Springfield, and several of the large foundations in Chicago are also part of this Press Forward movement, including MacArthur and the Chicago Community Trust and the Joyce Foundation. And so that is also providing some help. But importantly, we're also seeing entrepreneurship at local news organizations and innovation in growing and building new news organizations. There are a number of examples. I could probably get in trouble for singling any of them out individually, but one that I think has just done a superb job is Block Club Chicago, which is now a 6-year-old digital-only, hyper-local news site here in the city that is providing coverage, in-depth coverage of neighborhoods across the city. They started off small. They've been growing incrementally with philanthropic money, but they now have a lot of reader revenue that is coming in because people love the kind of hyper-local news that they're getting from them. They're also getting philanthropic support. They sell merch. They do events. And they've really built a diverse revenue stream. And I think actually Block Club may be one of the biggest success stories in local news in the country in the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I know Charlie's a big fan of them, and Charlie's also involved with Capital News Illinois, which is set up the State House to provide
right.
coverage for everybody. It's an Illinois Press Association initiative there. Both of you deal with students. I've dealt with students through the years. It's got to be difficult to get students right now to decide, I want a career in journalism. What's your thought about the future of bringing in new talent to journalism?
You have to kind of meet folks where they are and figure out what is it that young people want, and get them to realize how important it is informing your friends and neighbors about significant events, about government that will affect their lives. And that's what reporters do. And there's a couple of interesting things. I saw a story in the Columbia Journalism Review the other day that there are a number of collaborations between universities and outlets across the country that train students to fill in gaps in local news coverage. And you mentioned Capital News Illinois. Well, we're, and I say we because I'm on basically the founding organization is the Illinois Press Foundation, and I'm on the foundation board. We've got arrangements with Medill, and we've got arrangements with Southern Illinois University, where those students will come and serve internships where they will be producing content that can then be sent out to local outlets across the state. And so that gives them a taste of doing significant work, and it enables them to decide for themselves whether this is a career that I would like. The kind of the whole premise on which this nation was founded was that we don't need kings, we don't need monarchs, we don't need some kind of divinely appointed ruler. At least that was always used to be the thought. And instead, we can rely on everyday people to figure out how they're going to govern themselves. But what they need is the information. And so, therefore, we're going to provide that government cannot basically control the right of the free press. And that is now developed because of technology into a whole bunch of different potential ways to communicate. And the challenge for legacy media, if you will, and for people of my generation is how do you incorporate the technology and the communication means that are being used by young people to convey to them the news that they need about what's going on in their communities.
And Tim, your thoughts on that as far as getting young people interested in journalism and continuing this pipeline of talent to help this industry?
Sure. Well, Charlie, that was well said. At Medill, we're fortunate our classes are full again this year. And the one thing that I pick up from students is, first of all, they're very mission driven, which I think is great. But also I wouldn't say they're undaunted by the challenges, but they're in some ways excited about the challenges. They see news creators on social media that are gaining popularity and even income in many cases. They do see the creation of these digital sites. They see the creation of new digital networks. And so I think many of them are excited about creating whatever new form of local news distribution that we come up with. You know, that's invigorating, actually, to be in an environment where, you know, you have young people that are saying, okay, we know there's a problem, we know there's a challenge, but we're also beginning to see some solutions and want to be part of it.
Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it at this time. A good conversation. Our panel this week included Charlie Wheeler and Tim Franklin, founding director of the Local News Initiative at Northwestern at Medill School of Journalism, and also professor and chair in local news. Look for State Week where you get your podcast through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. We'll also have a link to the State of Local News report at our show page. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.